latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Thursday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm your host, Mary Edgerton, along with an ensemble of gifted hosts, Hank Rubicek, our producer and the show's founder, Greg Audell, appearing with Floyd the Wonder Dog, and Warren Holloman, our master of wellness. These guys are not only gifted hosts, but they are also great storytellers. We also have a wonderful group of guest hosts who grace our show, Harwood Taylor and Chris Gorman, Eric Heen and Paul Topekian. Truly a wonderful group to spend an evening with. And speaking of wonderful groups, we have a wonderful group of storytellers tonight. I have invited Rachel Hempel Dixon, artistic associate, frequent director and actress from the Ensemble Theater, along with her colleagues, actors and writer-poets, Jason Carmichael, Crystal Ray, Wayne DeHart, and a leader in the youth program for the theater, Sam Harvey, to tell us something about their favorite things. First, I want to read something from the website about the legacy of the Ensemble Theater by way of introduction. The Ensemble Theater was founded in 1976 by the late George Hawkins to preserve African-American artistic expression and enlighten, entertain, and enrich a diverse community. Decades later, the theater has evolved from a touring company operating from the trunk of Mr. Hawkins' car to being one of Houston's finest historical cultural institutions. The Ensemble is one of the only professional theaters in the region dedicated to the production of works portraying the African-American experience. The oldest and largest professional African-American theater in the Southwest, and holds the distinction of being one of the nation's largest African-American theaters, owning and operating its facility and producing in-house. The Ensemble Theater has fulfilled and surpassed the vision of its founder and continues to expand and create innovative programs to bring African-American theater to a myriad of audiences. At our halftime announcements, I will tell you more about what's happening at the Ensemble Theater. But first, let's start with Rachel to tell us about a favorite thing, time, or person. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Jason and Wayne and Crystal. You guys are awesome, as is Sam. He's just not here to hear it. I appreciate you guys being willing to just jump in and, you know, represent the place and all that. So whoop, whoop to y'all, right? The best storytellers in the house. So the theater has been staying alive beautifully through COVID. And it's due to artists like these who are willing to work with us as we figure out what we can do and bring to the stage and what stories we can tell and tell them without being face-to-face, right? Because so much of storytelling is being in the room, or for us in theater anyways, being in the room and sharing breath. And then on the radio, it's sharing the airwaves. So we have been really grateful to have had opportunity to create while we're in COVID and continue to tell stories. And so the virtual programming that you'll talk about means a lot. And we've done a lot of programming since COVID began back in March, and have had some really wonderful stories. We had Greenwood by Celeste Bedford Walker, where she was talking about, however so timely, right, the Oklahoma massacre, and not knowing that we were about to have the fallouts that we were about to have. So doing that story was timely. And then Never Ending, which was a piece by Yunina Barber Payne, and it was children talking about protesting, right? That was in response to what was happening in the world. So we just try to make sure it is relevant and tell stories that reflects the world and that the world needs to hear. So I2M America is one of the pieces that we have coming up, I mentioned, and it is in February, and it speaks to, we live in this country as brown, black and brown, and we too are America. We make up what this country is about. So we hope that people come and share that story with us, along with all the other things that people can find out about on our website that we have coming up. Mr. Wayne will be participating in a conversation on Sunday that is folks who have been on the stage of the ensemble and have a film life as well that is very healthy. And they'll talk about how equity, diversity, and inclusion is a part of the film and stage world and how they all intersect. So that's something that's coming up we're excited about. And I'm saying all of that to say, you know, one of my favorite things is bringing people together. So it has been fun to help make this evening happen with these folks. And to hear, part of bringing people together, me, is for us to not forget the history of our ancestors, right? So when I hear young people saying, oh, forget that, it happened, let's just look ahead. Yes, we have to look ahead, but you can't forget what has been. You can't forget the shoulders upon which you stand, right? So my stories my story came from conversations that I had with my grandmother. And so that is really what the story is about. You know, I was young in my artistry, in fact, studied engineering in school. And while I was engineer, I was still trying to do theater. And, you know, I didn't fully grasp what I was doing. I just knew that I needed to tell these stories and I needed to understand what had been. and then while I was in college, my mother passed away. So needing to know that history became that much more significant and important to me. So I called my grandmother because there was this show, this what they call it, show coming up. And I said, I want to be in that. I didn't have any fear back then, right? Got a little older. Now we have more fears, but no fear. I said, I want to be in that and I'm going to act, right? So my degree was in engineering and had not studied theater, but I knew I loved it. So I called my grandmother and I said, I'm going to ask you some questions. Can you tell me the answers to these questions? Now, she was really earnest about her answers, you know, and it was some of the, ooh, baby, talk about that, you know, or I don't think I should tell you that right now. You know, I asked thick questions and I was astounded by her answers. And even today, like I wrote that piece and did it for that talent show, went really well. You know, I have that look, black and white photograph that someone took of me on stage that I will forever cherish, you know, me doing a bad representation of my grandmother at the time, but it was so honest and heartfelt that, you know, it went well. And then I picked the script up about, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago, because someone else asked, can I do some monologues? So I participated in Lion Woman production of The Space Between Us, where it was bringing people together to tell stories and to close the divide between us, and that can happen with stories, right? So I pulled out the script with stories or the monologues that were created from my grandmother's answers. And I shared a few of those. And so there were a few of them that I didn't get to share. And I would like to just kind of talk through those. So one of the questions I asked my grandmother was, what did she, what's one of her most significant memories from her childhood? And she talked about getting her hair combed and how she did not like to get her hair combed. But my great-grandmother, Ma Inda, was serious about the hair combing. And so my grandmother, you know, recounted a story of not wanting to get it done. And as she had done with us many times, being sent out to get a switch from the tree because she wasn't following directions about getting that hair done, right? And that, you know, she eventually acquiesced, and she was a questioner as a kiddo, and she would ask questions of Ma Inda, and Ma Inda would tell her, we're not talking about that, you know? And I know my grandmother, right, as this 60, 70-year-old woman, and it's hard for me to imagine her at 10. I could imagine her being sassy because she was sassy at 60, but it was hard for me to imagine her at 10, you know, and defying Ma Inda, because Ma Inda was serious. You know, she wasn't playing. So that was one of her memories of being a child. She also instilled in us things that she recounted as from her childhood about what life was about, that she learned from her mother, from Ma Inda. So my great-grandmother, Elizabeth, instilled in us without me even realizing it that you have to be honest. You always have to be honest. You have to mean what you say what you mean without being rude. She always used to say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. She would always say, and she wouldn't, this one she wouldn't say, but somehow I got it because I teach it to my kids, and I've heard one of them say it recently, that your word is your bond because that's all you have forever. And so that story from her about growing up, I thought was really fascinating. And then I asked her, what was one of the hardest things she ever had faced? And she said it was the death of her daughter. Now, this was one of those, do we want to talk about this baby? Because, see, I didn't even know that this daughter existed. My mother was the oldest, but this was the daughter that was born before my mother. And that I don't even know if all of her children even knew about this daughter at the time. But she said she was pregnant with the baby and she did not want the baby, and the baby was born. Her name was, I think her name was Danielle, was Gwen. And she went in to pick up the baby one day after having talked about how she didn't want the baby and she wasn't really attached to the baby. And she went in and the baby was only, I think, about a 2 months old, and the baby had passed away. And she said it was devastating for her because she had not connected. And she was very sad that she'd ever, she felt like she had sinned and God was taking care of her because she had sinned and had said she didn't want it. She said she cried and cried out loud. She didn't mean it. And her significant at the time had to slap her to bring her back to herself. And that was hard to imagine too. My grandmother doing that. She talked about when I asked her, what is one political thing she remembered the first time she went to vote? She got spat on her way to the polls. And, you know, we took for granted. We're like, I'm not even going to vote on that one. I'm not going to go. She got spat on. How can I not go, right? I asked her, she talked about also working a campaign, which I thought was really interesting. Like, my grandmother was political? What? And that she worked a campaign because she said she knew the person that was running was going to be better than the person that was in office. And that informed my responsibility to be an active participant in the political process because she fought so that I could vote. She got spit on so that I could vote, right? One of the things that she remembered from her childhood that she taught her children, and she told me in a couple of her answers, was about when you go out in public, you have to look nice. And my mother never went out without hair combed, you know, looking nice, and instilled that in us. She might be a little disappointed now. I'm an artist and I'm like, hair, I'll worry about that later. But you look nice because you have to represent at all times. And that was part of going to the polls. She was dressed to, I'm here to work. And then one of the last things I asked her, one of the other things that last I'm going to share tonight is I asked her what was one of her proudest moments, and I'm going to read it as it is written in the script that it came from. One of my proudest moments as mother of this church, she was at church giving a talk, was a Mother's Day many years ago when my baby Rose, one of my aunts, that daughter sitting right over there, was but a young girl and gave testimony about all the kids around her on drugs and her five brothers and sisters, by the grace of God, she said, had a praying mama and was still going straight. It was very touching for me to tell it in church. Now, I'm always fussing, don't do this and don't do that, but I don't know. I didn't know it was taking effect. All good things are in my children, in all children. Even when kids that are just babies are having babies, we can't turn our backs on them. I'm a grandmother twice, a great-grandmother once. Their mothers grow, but I have to stop and take care of those other children. And it's a tragedy to have to stop and care for a child and a child's child. It's not an easy scene. Mental capacity work to send a child to school and a child's child to the nursery. But that's all right, because all good things are in children. Just like he looks after us, we have to look after our children. And those words came straight from her. Like, I recorded while she was talking to be able to share that. And so some of my favorite things as we approach the holiday, right, is being able to have time with my children and know that, we at the theater and we in the circles that I move in are looking after our kiddos and bringing them along. So, yeah.
Rachel, thank you so much for sharing your grandmother with us. I look forward to hearing your monologue. Crystal Ray is also here to talk about her favorite things. Crystal, welcome to the show. I know you are an actress with the Ensemble Theater. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
That I have my own Tiny Baby LLC, and I'm just starting the process of creating stories that are in my head.
Hey, cool. Is it called Tiny Baby LLC?
Yeah, it's called Crystal Ray Productions.
Okay, just checking.
No, but that's cute though.
Crystal Ray Productions, and you're going to be in Storytime Santa. Is there anything else you want me to?
I'm Kristen. I too am America. So I'm excited about that.
So
You don't have anything about iTunes, Miss Mary, but I will send you something. I'm sure we've created some publicity that just hasn't made it to me yet. That iTunes Am America is our upcoming production that'll run in the month of February, streamed. Yeah, I guess it's live stream, you know, the language.
Yeah, we call it live streamed. It's like we're live recorded.
Okay, yes, then it is live streamed for I2M America in the month of February. So it'll be a great production for Black History Month. I am planning to do a short little monologue from that just to get a sense of what the piece is like. But yeah, and Crystal Ray is in it. That's exciting.
Great.
Thanks, Rachel. I appreciate that information, and we will keep up with I2M America. So, Crystal, back to you and your favorite things.
My favorite things, other than Luther Vandross singing, these are a few of my favorite things. Matches. Light bulbs. I mean, we draw them, and they appear in these funny cartoons illustrating an idea or revelation of some sort. But light bulbs are kind of clean in a way, and somewhat effortless for the consumer. I don't want to light light bulbs. I want to start fires. The kind of fires that warm food and homes and are surrounded by ancient stories. I want to write and direct light-filled stories capable of chasing shadows off the trail and lend hope to the weary and accompany the prayers for a better tomorrow. The journey as an artist is, for me, learning how to build the perfect match, the perfect story. And this journey of perfection is pretty much at odds with the idea itself. can you be both on a journey and already have it perfect? But that's how matches are lit, with scrapes and bruises and purposeful conflict. The kind of conflict that leaves the best ideas standing when the dust settles. My dream is to write stories that will spark when flickered against the bottom of an old gunslinger's boot in a dusty saloon. The ideas I love most are the ones that require effort and friction, and when engaged, produce heat and light and every kind of change available. Chemical change, social, emotional change, spiritual. I want to build ideas and write stories that create concepts that ignite change. But for who? Right? So the word niche is popular with upstarts and entrepreneurs, and I am that. I'm an upstart. I have a day job of teaching theater, and I love that. And I work professionally in Houston as an actress. I'm a writer and a director. The world of performing arts is my home, but I'm finally at a place in my own story where I feel brave enough to try to construct from this crayon scribbled blueprint the stories I've created, the ones I've drawn up. There are two projects that I'm tackling right now. One is an urban retelling of the Gospels, and the second is a science-focused puppet show geared toward fourth graders, but not just any fourth graders. There's a small group of kids that I had the pleasure of teaching when I was in elementary school that did not connect with Bill Nye the Science Guy. Do you remember Bill Nye? He hasn't passed away or anything, at least not at the time of me talking about it. That he's a good-looking, well-spoken white guy in a lab coat doing cool scientific activities. I love Domestic Kid, and I love the show. But the kids I was teaching, they would have had a better chance of seeing a pregnant elephant give birth on the sidewalk than to see a guy like Bill Nye in their neighborhood. And should there be a black kid on a Bill Nye episode, and that happens sometimes, that kid didn't sound like my students. That kid sounded like Bill Nye, who sounds like me. So both Bill Nye and I are alien to the kids I am teaching. Almost. I mean, I kind of got by. I look like them, but I didn't sound right. They expressed it like this. Miss Ray, why you talk like that? You black. And I can't blame them. I kind of fooled them. I look like them, but I don't sound like them. And I'm teaching them things they haven't heard before. It's so many disjointed things. They need their own Bill Nye. Don't they deserve that? So it's a science show for teachers who serve those kids, our kids. A modern day George Washington Carver, is that a good way to say it? I don't know. I think you get it, and I hope I can write it. I am hoping I can create something they connect with. It's called The Foundlings, and the writing is embryonic at best. Then it could all fail terribly. Skip Sparkle, Right to Fizz, Never Catch Fire. And therein lies the rub. Real art is risky, especially when you know who you want to serve and you hope what you're giving them makes sense to them, ignites them. And I could reassure myself that Bill Nye really is enough. I mean, I loved Bill Nye. Or I could be honest with myself and say, waiting on someone else to do it is foolish. The Ensemble Theater has been kind enough to lend a look to all of these ideas and their brilliance and help me figure out how we could potentially integrate arts with core curriculum, and that is wonderful, and I am grateful. But let me tell you, that puppet, the first puppet built for the show, my little show that's being birthed in my brain, that is the scariest puppet I've ever seen in my life, scarier than Chucky and any horror film, because I have to give her voice. I have to make her work. And I'm not sure that I can. But for those kids that I see in my mind, they deserve that I try. So for all the work and the possible failure ahead, my hope is that it leads to a world that is really brighter and warmer for everyone. Got a light?
Crystal Ray, that was beautiful and so beautifully delivered. I really want to know more about your work as you continue it, so please keep in touch. Our next member of the Ensemble Theater is actor and poet Wayne DeHart. Wayne, can you please share a favorite piece with us?
A short monologue from Radio Golf. And if you know the story of Radio Golf, there's a black man running for mayor. And obviously the people don't think he's going to win. And this gentleman is in the middle of a reconstruction effort that's going on. He owns a house that's in the middle of a place where they're going to build new high rises. And so he's in this man's office to try to tell him that this is his house and they can't tear it down. So while he's talking to him, he notices that the gentleman, Harmon Wilkes, has a pin on his lapel that looks like a flag. And he responds to him like this. "That's a nice flag picture you printing you got there. Them nice colors. Red, white, and blue. Look like the flag. We used to have a flag during the war. Come to be 4th Battalion. Fella named Joe Mott carried that flag. He got shot in the head. Second day of November, 1944. He was betting against it, but he lost. That American flag was everywhere. A lot of men died under that flag. Joe Mott carried in the battle, but a lot of men died under that flag. Flag was everywhere. Saw it in the mess hall, saw it in the dance hall. We used to have a great big old dance hall, and they'd invite the women in from town. We'd have a great big old dance. You look up on the bandstand, there'd be that flag. That flag was everywhere. Saw it in the morning when you got up. Saw it at night before you went to bed. Sometimes you saw it in your sleep. When the time come and I seen Joe Mott fall with that flag, got shot right in the head. Bullet went in one end and come out the other. I don't know where it went after that. When I saw that, I said, no, I can't let you get away with nothing like that. That's what I said when I picked up that flag. This the flag on this side of the battle. This the side I'm on. Joe Mott didn't die for nothing. If his life don't mean nothing, my life don't mean nothing. I got sense enough to see that. Some people can't see that. I can't let him die. Let the flag just lay there. I ain't even think about it. I was the closest one to it. I just walked over and picked it up, carried it to the day they discharged me, December 4th, 1945. When I got out of the Army, I went down to see Joe, my mother. She living down in Georgia. I went down to see her. Walking down the street, white fella stopped me, reached up, tore the flag off my coat. Said I didn't have the right to wear no American flag. I hope they let you keep yours.
Well, thank you, Wayne, for that wonderful rendition of Elder Joseph Barlow's monologue from Radio Golf by August Wilson. You really made him come to life. We are going to break now for station identification, and afterwards we will be back to hear you recite a poem that you wrote. We are here on So What's Your Story, broadcast live every Thursday at 8 p.m. on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, or live streaming from kpft.org. We look forward to our weekly show and the opportunity to be an important part of the Houston storytelling scene. First, let me put on my social media hat and say something about that. If you don't have a radio, it's no excuse for missing the show. We are broadcast from the website kpft.org over the internet all day, every day. So it is easy enough to catch the show on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. You can also visit our Facebook page during the week preceding the show and get an idea about what we're up to. You just never know. And here in Houston, time and stories are not stopped by a pandemic. So let's review what's happening in our storytelling community. Our show's sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, will host their next virtual story swap on Tuesday, December 22nd. They post the Zoom meeting room link on their website in the events calendar. So just click on the link for the story swap and it will take you to the link for the Zoom. Looks like there's going to be another Liars contest on January 21st, 2021 at Rudyard's Pub. Don't know about everybody else, but I, for one, will be happy to be in 2021. Oh, and by the way, if you are feeling nostalgic about times past, please check out the radio tab at the Houston Storytellers Guild site, because you can find recordings of our old shows there. Always fun. So that website is HoustonStorytellers.org. And that's Houston Storytellers as one word, plural, no periods. Speaking of websites, check out the Ensemble Theater's website, which is EnsembleHouston.org. Again, one word, Ensemble Houston, no spaces, no dots until you get to the .org. As Rachel mentioned, events are being presented virtually these days. Holiday Storytime with Santa will have its second live streaming on Saturday, December 19th at 10 a.m. Get a ticket for the whole family before they run out. On Sunday, December 20th, there will be a celebrity conversation on equity, diversity, and inclusion at 6 p.m. Again, please register. And I do believe Wayne DeHart will be in that conversation. There is also a recorded show, The Toys Take Over Christmas, that is available for rent by groups and organizations until December 31st. I love that title. I mean, who remembers Babes in Toyland? The archived video of Cinderella is available for rent between December 9th and 27th. And there are virtual young performers programs December 21st to 23rd and 28th to 30th. In fact, we will be hearing from one of their members in the second half of our show. And to keep in touch during social distancing, the theater has launched the Ensemble Theater Bold online series at noon on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So go check out EnsembleHouston.org. The Moth in Houston is on hold for now, but if you check out themoth.org, you can find out about virtual events being held around the world. Think about it. You can go anywhere. But as Dorothy says, there's no place like home. So don't forget to curl up and tune in to KPFT 90.1 next Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? The next host up on the roster, well, they're actually hosts. The next hosts up on the roster are Greg Audell and Floyd the Wonder Dog. I always love Floyd. But now let's get back to our favorite things. Next, Wayne DeHart is coming back to read a poem that he wrote. Wayne.
This is a piece that I wrote while I was in New Jersey for 5 months. And the George Floyd thing came down. I was watching it on CNN every night, try to make myself go to sleep. And I've always, you know, spoke out on something like this that happened. I felt kind of awkward that I was in New Jersey and I wasn't able to be involved in this whole situation and stuff. And after I got my second positive test of COVID, I kind of broke down. I was in pretty bad shape. And one of the assistants came by and gave me a journal and told me to write something in it. And this poem was about George Floyd, and it was what I wrote in it to kind of vent my frustrations and stuff. So it's called I Can't Breathe. A gentle black giant, even when he was young, now his name is on everybody's tongue. A kid from CUNY homes grew up in the trade. On May 25th, everybody heard him say, I can't breathe. He called on his mama. He said, mama, please, they're taking away my life because I can't breathe. Counterfeit, they say, was the $20 bill. Counterfeit was the reason that he was killed. His air cut off by a cop's knee. At that moment in time, you could hear him plead. I can't breathe. He called on his mama, said, mama, please. They're taking away my life because I can't breathe. Video rolling. He just didn't care. Cop probably thinking, let me fix my hair. A knee in the back, another on his leg. for 846. He had a knee on his head. George Floyd, George Floyd, the protesters shouted, was just plain murdered. That nobody doubted. A man in blue had done the deed. As George Floyd said, I can't breathe. He called on his mama, said, Mama, please. It's taking away my life because I can't breathe. Into the spotlight stepped his little girl. Said, my daddy is dead, but he changed the world. He changed the world. They needed to overhaul the police system so the black man isn't the targeted victim. The change is going to come. This you should heed, because George Floyd said, I can't breathe. He called on his mama and said, Mama, please, they're taking away my life because I can't breathe. As they put the body into the hearse, why wasn't this called murder in the first? A life snuffed out behind a $20 bill. Apathetic emotion from the fool on the hill. Is there no one that we can trust who will give us justice? As I look around, I just see us. On the Bill of Rights, four cops peed while George Floyd said, I can't breathe. He called on his mama. He said, Mama, please. They're taking away my life because I can't breathe. Make me want to holler when they do my life. Tension so thick you can cut it with a knife. Black folk tired of asking why. Black folk tired of seeing black men die. Black folk tired of seeing blood in the streets. Black folk tired of White House tweets. A new world order is bound to come, all brought about by a third world son. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. All this protesting gonna do some good. It's all busting loose like a galloping steed. The George Floyd said, I can't breathe.
Wayne, that was very moving. I hope that 2021 will bring in change as we need it badly. Black Lives Matter. That murder was decried around the world, but it shouldn't have taken a cold-blooded murder to make people realize that Black Lives Matter, that we need to change our laws, that we need to address our unconscious bias. Thank you for sharing your poem with us. I would like to add on a happy note that I am happy to hear that you survived this terrible pandemic. You would have been a great loss to the artistic community. Our next guest is Sam Harvey. Actually, kind of two guests, as his little brother makes a short appearance, as you will hear.
So, Sam, what are you studying?
I go to school at HSPVA, and I'm in the vocal department. So I study study music theory. I'm in tenor bass choir. I have voice lessons there as well. And I also do concert singers within my department. So,
well, Sam would never brag on himself, but he has been the front man for a number of YP productions. So we're super proud of him at the ensemble. He does the Young Performers Program, kills it every time. And he's over there doing his thing at HSPVA, but he wouldn't tell you that. He like gets the lead almost every year.
So YP is the Young Persons Program.
Young Performers Program at the Ensemble.
Well, my story is about I've always really liked to play guitars, especially during around the holidays. I never really had a guitar, but I've just gotten a guitar. I got one not too long ago, and I've always loved to play it, and it's been really fun. I always like to play it around my family, and me and my family, we gather around the Christmas tree, and we like to tell stories, and usually my dad, he would play guitar. Like, he used to play guitar for him. He's played guitar for us around Christmas. And when he would play guitar, it kind of made me want to play because that's all I would know. That's all I would see. I would see people around me. They would play instruments and stuff. And that's just one of my favorite things that I like to share. My dad, he's always played Purple Rain on the acoustic guitar. And he taught it to me. And I've played it ever since I've played acoustic guitar. It's always one of my go-to songs when I want to warm up or something. It's just a song that I play when it makes me, when I'm like either sad or happy, even when I'm just bored, I'll play this song and it just makes me feel good. I believe that Prince shaped music to make music, to make what music is today. I believe without the greats of like Prince or Michael Jackson or Bobby Brown or New Edition or other artists, I can go back as far as the 50s.
And interestingly, there was just an article the day before about Prince.
May I have 1 second to get my little brother out?
Yep.
Thank you. Come on. Let's go.
That's your son, Sam?
Oh, no. That's my little brother.
Your little brother. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, always the worst ones. The little brother. I'm a little brother, so I know.
Can I throw out there that Samuel's a beautiful singer, so he could probably sing a note or two of this stuff that he's talking about.
That would be so perfect.
This is Purple Rain on capo. I play it on the third fret. I put my capo on third fret.
Never meant to cause you any sorrow. Never meant to cause you anything. Only on one time see you laughing. Only wanna see you laughing in the purple rain, purple rain, purple rain. Purple rain, purple rain. Purple rain, purple rain. Only wanna see you bathed in the purple rain. Honey, I know time to change it. It's time we all reach out for something new. That means you too. You say you wanna lead us, but you can't seem to make it mine. I think you better close it. Let me guide you to the purple rain, purple rain. All I wanna see you, all I wanna see you in the purple rain.
Sam, that was beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And now, what do you think the story of the song was?
For me, I believe Purple Rain is, I believe it's about love and like, I believe Purple Rain is basically Prince telling in the story, it's the girl, but I believe that Prince is telling this girl that he loves her, but he doesn't want for anyone to see her in a certain way, because he loves her and he knows who she truly is. Whereas how everybody else sees her is this or that way. Everybody else wants to use her for this or that. Prince just genuinely loves her, and that's what I believe this song is about.
And so he wants to see her in the magical purple rain world.
Yes, ma'am.
That is that's a marvelous song and a marvelous movie. So if anybody's looking for a movie that they want to watch during the pandemic, I recommend it. Thank you for that. That was beautiful. And thank you, Crystal, for letting us know. That put the story all together.
Now we are going to listen to Jason Carmichael telling us about his favorite thing. Jason is from Houston originally, although he lived in California for many years, where he often had TV, and film roles. He relocated to Houston and reconnected with his first love, the theater. But there's something that Jason loves more than the theater, and he's now going to tell us the story of his favorite thing.
Jason, you've been so wonderful to wait.
Oh, no problem. I was being thoroughly entertained.
Yeah. So,
no, no problem. Yes, well, I'm Jason Carmichael. I'm also an actor and writer with the Ensemble Theater. And I was thinking about my favorite things. And the first thing that came to my mind, of course, is my son. He's my favorite thing. And as he's coming for the Christmas holiday, I was inspired to tell the story of his first coming into the world. And so before I get to that, though, I have to give you a little background on his mother and I, who we met at the Department of Cultural Affairs, where I used to work in Los Angeles, and we were in the midst of having a cultural affair. She being from Belgium and myself being from the United States, both of us being in California, kind of cut off from our circle of friends. So 10 years pass, and then she gets pregnant. Good timing on the alarm. So she gets pregnant. Now, suffice it to say that for these 10 years that we've been together, she has repeatedly said to me that she would like to have my child. We never were married, mind you. And she said that she wanted to have my child up until the time she got pregnant. And then she began to question the sense of that, my being an actor and sometimes doing well and sometimes not, as the actor's roller coaster can go. So because she was unsure about wanting to have my child, she was thinking about having an abortion and wanting to have an abortion and then plan to have a child 2 years later. Well, I said, well, it's your body, and I don't have any say-so on that. What I do have a say-so over is I'm not planning for any 2 years from now when we have a child in the oven right now. So we ended up going to therapy so that she could come to grips with this pregnancy. Came through the therapy and she decided, yes, we're going to have the child. Going through the term, and we come to find, we didn't want to know what gender the child was. Neither one of us wanted to know that. We were in agreement with that. And he was very helpful with that because he was breech. He was upside down, his legs over his head, behind, coming down. So shortly before, maybe 2 weeks or a month before it was time for him to come into the world, the doctors wanted to try to turn him. Well, I said, okay, I mean, y'all know what you're doing. You're the medical professionals. I'm thinking there was going to be some sophisticated way that the turning is done, but there is no sophisticated way. It was four doctors, two on each side, and they literally pushed to try to physically turn him in the womb. Well, this did not work. I guess he was comfortable where he was, and he went into cardiac arrest. His heart rate was so high from all this pressure that they had to do an emergency C-section right away. So put on the scrubs, I'm in the room, and they use a laser. And they got to go through seven layers, and if you pinch yourself, you don't think of your flesh, being seven layers, but it's seven layers. And it was amazing. So I'm in there and I'm watching layer by layer by layer. And then the doctor's reaching in. And we, like I said, we didn't know the gender of the child. And so every night we would look at these names in the big fat name book, and we would come up with names. They had to have a criteria for both of us. For example, I knew I didn't want any junior I didn't want any typical kind of name. For her, it had to be a name that sounded good in French. And so we had all these different criteria. Anyway, the doctor's reaching in. I'm standing there. The doctor says, okay, we've got an elbow. We've got a knee. We've got a shoulder. We've got a, it's a boy. And he brought him up, and my son started peeing all over the room, and which is how we knew it was a boy, because of the way that he was peeing all over the room. And it was raining outside. And when he came out and started peeing, the rain stopped. And so one of the names that we had come across in our name book, we had about 30 names for females and 30 names for males. There was one name, Tejome, which is a Hindu name, but it sounded pretty good in French, and it meant bringer of light. So when he came out into the world and he peed and the rain stopped and the sun came out, I said, that's Tejome. And so, and I got to cut the cord, and his eyes never closed the whole time. And he, because of the way that he had been inside the womb, it took about almost 6 months before his legs dropped. So his knees were like by his ears. He was like a little frog. And he had jaundice. And so we used to have to take him out into the front yard, 20 minutes on each side, to get the sun to help the jaundice. And I would pull his legs down and hold them, and then they would pop back up. So he never crawled. He did the army crawl up into furniture, and then he was walking. When he was 11, his mother and I had separated, and they moved to Belgium. And I moved back home to Houston. And he was supposed to follow me 2 years later, which turned into 3 and then 4 and then 5, as I fought with his mother to send him over to me. And then he failed a grade. And then she thought, maybe it's time for him to be with his father. So now as I wait for another Christmas with my son, who is now 20 and way over me, and I think back to his little jaundiced body and frog legs and being turned in the womb and almost not getting here because of his mother not sure what kind of father and provider I might be, that somehow we made it. And so he's still my favorite thing today.
That's cool.
That's it.
That's a beautiful story.
That's cool. So he gave y'all a baptism.
Oh, and I'm telling you.
And you said you could tell by the way, couldn't you tell by what it was coming out of? That it was a boy?
But I was trying to choose my words. I wanted to be respectful of everybody in the room. But that's when the doctor said, we got a this, we got a that, we got a, oh, it's a boy.
Everybody stand back.
He was coming into the world. He was ready.
Well, that's what men do. The first thing in the morning is
he was marking his territory.
He was already starting his rites of passage.
That's right. That's right.
He works with your son. He is just as talented as you are.
No, I thank you. Yes, you have directed. He's in film school now and doing so well, making the short films and everything. I'm so proud of him.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And he's so tall, you would never know his legs wasn't doing the right thing.
That's what's amazing about it. That is the truth. That is the truth.
Oh, I love that.
That's and it's so funny. I have to say, I'm doing one of Crystal's pieces that she wrote, and there's a section of, it's a one person show, so it's all a monologue. And there's a section of it And I was thinking, I never have said this to Crystal, but I was like, did I tell you the story of my son being born? Because in this monologue, the baby is breech, right, upside down, and there's this whole passage. And I'm thinking to myself, I had to have told Crystal the story of my child, but I don't think I ever did. And so it was just such a wonderful coincidence. So I just had to share that with you, Crystal.
That's
but yes.
amazing, because I'm sitting here listening like Jason playing. No, you're telling a real story. I was like,
that's a real story.
Like, did you take this from my story?
That's why I wanted to say that. Yeah. So when I first read that, I was like, woo, crystal in my head on that one, because that is my child right there. That's Little Froggy. Mm-hmm. Bottoms up.
Yeah, bottoms up.
Jason, thank you for that delightful story of love and sunshine. One thing that has come through tonight in everybody's stories is that we love our children, we love our young people, and may the world be an ever better place for them. My thanks to Rachel Hempel-Dixon for helping me to organize this show around these creative artists from the Ensemble Theater, Crystal Ray, Wayne DeHart, Sam Harvey, and Jason Carmichael. Please check their website at ensemblehouston.org for the time and dates of their upcoming shows. And don't forget to look for I Too Am American in February. I want everybody to keep well. We have pivoted on the pandemic, and we will pivot on the post-pandemic when the time is right. We are here for you. You're the best audience a storyteller could hope for. And don't you dare move, because we have another great KPFT show following us. Yes, coming up next, you'll be loving the very cool Lars and the Tennyson Tapes right here on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary E., and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Contributions play an extremely important role in the quality of the music and news you hear on this station. If you've never made a contribution to KPFT, we need to hear from you. With the threat of reduced federal funding for public radio, first-time contributors are more important now than ever. Call 713-526-5738 now to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. We need your pledge. You make a huge difference in this radio station when you pledge to KPFT. Again, that number is 713 713- 503-526-KPFT. Call and make your tax-deductible contribution today. You can also pledge online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston. Go tell it on the mountain. Go talk it to the seashore. Whisper it in the breeze. Say it wherever you please. But it's a secret that needs to get out. So tell a friend that you heard it on KPFT. It's a secret.